Thank you. So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming along, and thank you to the organisers for inviting me to speak this morning. So I'm talking about reproductive and sexual health, taking an integrated approach, and I'm coming to it from a fairly high level. First of all, I want us to have a think about Clara, just to set the scene. She's 27 years old. She presents to a clinic in a rural area of, let's say, New South Wales for an STI check. No problems with that. We also find out she's got an expired contraceptive implant, she's an erratic condom user, and she intimates that she's scared of her partner who refuses to use condoms. She's quite keen on an IUD. She thinks she's never been screened for cervical cancer. In fact, she didn't receive the HPV vaccine. Her mother was an anti-vaxxer. Unfortunately, there's no trained provider in this clinic to remove the implant or to insert an IUD. She'd have to travel to another town to get an IUD. The clinic's not funded for cervical screening, so she needs to be referred back to the GP and may never make it, of course. Also, her pregnancy test is positive. We know that she actually wants to, she doesn't want this pregnancy. She wants to be referred for an abortion. Unfortunately, it's going to take her 5 hours or more to drive to the nearest abortion clinic. So, let's have a think of an integrated approach. This is what the World Health Organization says. It's about bringing together inputs, delivery, management, and organization of services related to diagnosis, treatment, care, rehabilitation, and health promotion. And we've got good evidence globally that integration leads to health system efficiencies, improved access to essential services, increased satisfaction with care, and improved health outcomes. There are some challenges in Australia, and I'll talk also a little bit about New Zealand as well. We know that the Australian health system is made up of several different but connected systems. This creates challenges. We know that our funding and policy mechanisms come from federal, state, and local governments, as well as from the private sector. This creates challenges. So we end up, or we can end up, with siloed disciplines and vertical service administration, and we know that this can lead to fragmentation of care, and in particular, to missed opportunities for care, as we've seen with Clara. And we know from some excellent work done by Melissa Kang and Fiona Robards on the Access 3 studies that there's particular challenges for marginalised adolescents, particularly those with multiple vulnerabilities, such as being sexuality or gender diverse, from a cold, culturally and linguistically diverse background. We know that many sexual and reproductive health conditions are connected along the life course and overlap at specific stages. And the world is looking at this. We are a signatory to the Sustainable Development Goals, and if we're going to make progress against these up to 2030, then we absolutely need to look at integration. Next to that is the 2008 Lancet Guttmacher Commission report about taking things a step further around sexual and reproductive health and rights. We did a bit of a scorecard for Australia, and we're doing quite well in some areas, but pretty poorly in others, and that is reflecting our lack of integration. So let's have a look at optimal reproductive health care is inextricably linked to optimal sexual health, and that's in the areas of contraception, abortion care, STIs, reproductive tract cancers, that's the HPV virus there, and infertility. And what we need to be able to do is to ensure equity of access to sexual and gender-inclusive information and services which recognise and respond to gender-based violence and reproductive coercion. And we'll be hearing about this during this session. So what are some of the key issues in each of these areas? So if we're talking about contraception, we're all aware, and we've heard Sharon Cameron talking so eloquently this morning, about the effectiveness of LARC, long-acting reversible contraceptives, namely the IUDs and implants, their cost effectiveness. And what we know is that actually the community is catching on. And in our family planning clinics, we could actually spend our entire days doing nothing else but insert IUDs or train GPs, nurses to put in IUDs. We cannot keep up with demand. And that's why we need to ensure that we support multidisciplinary training. We need to expand it out. And we need to have communities of practice for people who are inserting. But most importantly, Sharon was talking about postpartum IUDs and implants this morning. We're doing a research trial with two hospitals in New South Wales around midwives inserting implants and providing counselling so before women leave hospital they can have their LARC method. But we need to work out ways of scaling this up. That's what we need to do, is the scalability. And we don't have remuneration pathways, we know, for nurses working in general practice, for instance. We need to ensure that we've got access for people with specific needs in terms of their contraception. And we know that often these are neglected because of that lack of integration, people with obesity, HIV, transgender and non-binary people, for instance. If I jump now to pills rather than the LARC method, we know that there's a call to think about expanding access through pharmacy-led pill supply, and Sharon's going to talk about it. There's two states that are talking about this at the moment, but as we all know, there's a lot of kickback from GPs sometimes, and the pharmacists kick back the other way. We know that this can work. In New Zealand, we had a presentation last year showing how it's working in New Zealand, but it's only going to work if we've got integration, if we've got experts in contraception involved in the training of the pharmacists. And another new area which I want to raise is around tackling reduced condom use with LARC. This is going to come out at this conference. So Lucy Watcher-Smith is presenting on this reduced condom use with LARC. And we know, again, this highlights the fact that there sometimes is lack of integration. And in fact, one of the key areas of integration is, globally has been sort of highlighted and tackled recently. So there was much concern after several observation studies over many years, large observational studies showing that, or suggesting that women using depot injections were at increased risk of HIV acquisition. This was a shocking thing because in many countries where adolescents in particular are at risk of HIV, the main form of government-supplied contraception is depot provera. So the plunge was taken. They needed to set up a huge randomised control trial, which they did. They randomised women at risk of HIV to either a depot injection, a Jadel 2-rod implant, or to a copper IUD. And I stayed up very late in June to watch the results of this amazing trial come out. And in fact, the world breathed a sigh of relief because, in fact, it did not show that there was an increased risk of acquisition with depot. In fact, it was the same across all the groups. But what the trial did very disturbingly show was that all of these women, the rates of HIV acquisition for all of these adolescents in particular was unacceptably high. So we need to look at how we combine that messaging around condom use. All the women, by the way, in the trial were given free condoms and obviously given all the same information about safe sex. Let's come to medical and surgical abortion now. We know that in Australia and in New Zealand, there is very patchy, publicly funded access. We know that there's actually stigma and shame associated with delivering abortion care, and we need to actually break that down through a multidisciplinary integrated approach. We need to be talking about abortion, teaching about abortion in medical schools. We know that the gynecologists are now actually incorporating it into their training. General practice is incorporating it into the training. But we know from research we've done in New South Wales that GPs who want to provide medical abortion, they often feel totally isolated, totally stigmatised. They don't get the support from the gynecologists in the public hospitals, and it just doesn't work. So we've just got to get this integration going. And again, we've got to support pharmacists as well. Many pharmacists, there are some pharmacists and there are some doctors who are conscientious objectors, but there are many pharmacists I meet who just feel unsupported. They just don't feel it's a step too far for them to provide the medical abortion drugs. We need to work together. STIs and BBVs, we're doing quite well in some aspects, but there's big gaps in other areas. We need to increase opportunistic testing in general practice across sexual health, family planning. We know that gonorrhea, in particular amongst heterosexual women, is a particular issue. Certainly here in Perth has been one of the key areas. We know we need to enhance PID detection across all our different services to reduce ectopic pregnancy and infertility down the track. And we have to improve antenatal testing. This is working with the gynecologists, working together with the ONGs and the STI experts to reduce this national shame of congenital syphilis. We need to meet the reproductive health needs of women living with HIV and ensure that we're also supporting PrEP for women at risk of HIV. And we really need to put pressure on getting guidelines for women who are breastfeeding and pregnant in terms of PrEP. One area we're doing reasonably well, in fact, we are doing very well in Australia in terms of prevention of cervical cancer, but there are certainly big gaps we have to fill, and in fact all our efforts should be going on closing the gap. We know that the mortality rate for Aboriginal or Indigenous women for cervical cancer is around about 4 to 5 times higher than for non-Indigenous women, which is a shocking thing indeed. So we need to enhance uptake of HPV vaccination, we need to eliminate those missed opportunities. We saw it with Clara, and certainly the world will be looking to Australia in terms of a possible move to incorporate self-collection more holistically. At the moment, it's fairly limited. We're trying to actually ensure that women can do a self-collected sample if they're pregnant. At the moment, it's not in the guidance. Finally, to other areas. One is preconception care. Again, we know there are many missed opportunities, and we're going to be trialling in a research study this concept or intervention, if you call it, a one key question. It's come out of Oregon. And it's to ask women of reproductive age, would you like to become pregnant in the next year? We're going to test it here. If women say yes, then we can institute preconception care. If no, obviously they may not have any contraceptive needs, but if they do, it's ensuring that they've got the most accurate information about effective contraception. And we mustn't forget infertility. We have great imbalances as well. Infertility can cause terrible stigma amongst some cultures, for some women and couples, and we need to make sure there's equity of access. We need rapid referral pathways to accessible assisted conception as well. So just having a look at integrated models of care. Well, GPs, of course, are their own integrated model of care. I'm not just a GP, I'm your specialist in life. Enormous, they have to be across enormous areas of health, and we don't give them the support that they need in some areas, including medical abortion, as I said before. Family Planning Alliance Australia, we have many family planning organisations across the country. We're all funded in different ways. Some are funded to do some things and not others. Some are funded to do HIV medicine. We're funded to, at the moment, we're providing colposcopy. Some don't do cervical screenings. So what we need, I would suggest, is we need to upscale family planning organisations. We are integrated models of care, and we need to be able to meet the training demands, for instance, around LARC. And then the sexual health clinics. Again, many different models, depending on the funding. This is Cairns Sexual Health Clinic. It's a particular sort of, it is, again, a very integrated model. It provides transgender care. It provides medical abortions as well. But we know that the funding structures can limit what some sexual health clinics actually are able to do, although I'm very heartened that many in New South Wales are thinking about how to integrate contraception provision, LARC provision, into their services. I'm just going to say the Chalmers Centre, I know that Sharon is very involved with, and I just wanted to highlight that, you know, there are some global models that we can look at. So in the year 2000, the Scottish Government, and Sharon can talk much more on this than me, decided that it was time to transform sexual health in Scotland. Very poor indicators across many, many areas. And what they did was that they came up with the Sandiford Initiative, it was called. It has evolved from a convergence of family planning, reproductive health services, genital urinary medicine, and the Centre for Women's Health into a fully integrated, specialised sexual health service across the National Health Service, Greater Glasgow and Clyde Health Board. The woman over up there is talking about abortion access on the website. I managed to put the video on. I'd forgotten about internet access on the plane. I couldn't turn it off, so all my neighbours were listening to it, and I thought, luckily we're destigmatising abortion. I thought that was good. But just, there are many different services that Sandiford provides, a whole range of them, including sexual assault services, including gender services, obviously contraception, cervical screening for rape survivors. So lots of lessons to be learned there. So just to sum up, it does not have to mean, so integration does not have to mean offering all services in one place. But what it does have to mean is ensuring that we have referrals and linkages that work exceedingly well. And we need to always think about how we can be using technology to enhance what we call health system navigation. It will save people having to go from this place to that place to that place, sometimes having three intimate examinations in different places. We need to use technology to make this integration work. And what I would suggest in terms of where to from here, we need the data. We're quite good at collecting some data in some areas, but we've got noticeable gaps in others. So notably, there is no national abortion data collection. The ASHA 3 study is underway in its planning, led by Rebecca Guy, so that will provide some much-needed data, but we need other national data collection sets, routine ongoing collection. We need funded research to provide the evidence base for integration. We've got NHMRC research up and going, so we've got some excellent CREs, Centre of Research Excellence, including the Sphere Centre of Women's Sexual and Reproductive Health, led by Danielle Matzo, and Sharon is an investigator on that. So this is excellent. It's looking at improving this integration in primary care. What I would suggest is that we need to all get together to put in grants that are cross-disciplinary. We have got a National Women's Health Strategy just launched by Greg Hunt, the Health Minister, just recently, 2020 to 2030. It doesn't have much in the way of contraception. It has one line on abortion, but that's one line enough. So I suggest we all have to lobby We all have to be there and push forward and ensure that we have implementation around access to these integrated services. So we've got integrated workforce training as a priority, and of course ASHA is an ideal vehicle to drive that. But I think we need some aspirational goals as well. And we need to just think about whether there could ever be such a thing as a Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Healthcare as exists in the UK. There are some challenges. It's associated with the College of ONGs, whereas here most of our contraception, for instance, occurs through general practice. But I think there are some discussions to be had. I've put as another aspirational goal, I don't know whether she's here, I think we should all clone Jane Tomney, because I think as a one-woman person with Saoirse from her talk this morning, she could actually scale up integration across the country in no time. So I just come back to Clara. She's, as we remember, she's 27, presented for an STI check, expired implant, keen on an IUD, erratic condom use, scared of her partner, had never been screened for cervical cancer and was pregnant. And in our new, brave new world, she's actually going to be able to have a medical abortion provided on site, of course, have the expired implant taken out. We now know that, you know, exploration of her reproductive coercion is very important. We know that this can be an indicator of intimate partner violence. So she's referred to a social worker at a nearby centre. And the registered nurse is able to follow up with cervical screening, of course, and also provide an IUD insertion. So thank you.